470, Association of Taxi Cab Operators versus the City of Dallas. I hope whoever's cell phone went off disconnected it. All right, Mr. Hollingsworth, whenever you're ready.
May it please the court?
Yes, sir.
Two things we believe should be highlighted from the outset in the consideration of this case. First, ATO's evidence offered in opposition to summary judgment showing
that you better speak up a little bit.
Okay, my apologies.
Thank you.
ATO's evidence offered in opposition to summary judgment showing the acute economic impact of the CNG preference at Love Field is essentially uncontroverted. For taxi cab operators at the city in Dallas without permits in other towns and authorities, there is little to no choice but to operate from Love Field. And this CNG preference has forced non-CNG cabs to leave.
Without, being able to controvert any of that, there was no trial type hearing, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, well, how come out of a 2,700 registered taxis, there are only 120 that work at the airport? Is that by choice or is that by designation of some sort?
Your Honor, the registrations and the numbers who are operating are two different things. And the other thing is, there are not 21. Although they're permitted, there are some taxi cabs who have permits in places like DFW Airport, and they operate out of there. When I was talking about exclusively operating out of the city of Dallas, you can gather up permits from different places. And with respect to those who have permits exclusively in the city of Dallas, there is essentially no real economic alternative.
So you mean of these 120 taxis, some of them could be certificated out of Arlington or Fort Worth?
That they can be permitted in Arlington, Fort Worth, DFW Airport, I believe Plano, and I don't know whether Frisco has some.
Well, I've never gotten the impression that there was a dearth of cabs there. That's why I couldn't envision the Love Field operating with only 120 taxis showing up there.
Because I don't have a specific record citation, I'm not representing to the court either that I buy into the 120 number.
So the 120 is sort of misleading. Those are only the only ones that have permits in Dallas, but at any given day, you may have 400 or 500 taxis. It's just the others have permits from the surrounding areas.
To operate in the city of Dallas, you must have to operate at Love Field, you must have a Dallas permit.
Oh, okay.
To go through the queue.
Okay.
You can drop people off if you pick them up in Arlington.
Okay.
But the point of that was to say that if you operate out of Love Field, exclusively out of Love Field, you essentially have no choice. That testimony was provided by affidavit in our summary judgment submission, and it was also provided in
if you operate exclusively out of Love Field, you have no choice but what?
You have no choice but to buy a CNG taxi cab because you're not going to make a living there. And Judge Jones,
I still don't understand. It seems to me from reading the figures that why does anybody who's operating in Dallas have to rely on Love Field?
It's the only one.
I know it's only airport, but don't you have other calls for business? And
there are other calls for business, and none of them are, and all of them are dwarfed in the city of Dallas by Love Field, by orders of magnitude. This brings me to a point. This ended up being a trial on the papers, which is not what summary judgment is supposed to be. We came in and we put in prima facie evidence that this operated as a mandate at Love Field. And that evidence is uncontroverted. And the arguments that Judge Dennis just brought up, or that were implicated by what Judge Dennis was just saying, and earlier by what Judge Jones was just saying, are emblematic of this. If we were denied the opportunity to show what the real impact of these numbers were, or of this policy was.
Assuming that's true, what's your best case that says it's not almost precisely the legal question that was left open in engine manufacturers, that you had eight justices discussing in more than just dicta, considered dicta, as to whether they could imagine a Hobson's choice case that would get past shopping choices, the traveler's insurance logic, and become an enforceable mandate?
I think that it is exactly the incentive that was left open.
It is the issue.
Manufacturers. That's exactly what I think.
But if it is, I mean, and we're tea leaf guessing a teeny bit, on the other hand, you have eight justices that say, no, we think there's, quote, reinforced possibility. It looks like it was pretty considered dicta. And then Souter in dissent himself isn't arguing for preemption. So out of that, it doesn't look like such an open issue. It looks like a pretty solid implication that a preference and an economic imperative doesn't become an enforceable legal one.
I don't think that's what engine manufacturers says in the majority. The court adopts a definition of standard that is much broader than the one that's urged by the city here and was found by the trial court. The court just took a dictionary and looked at what standard means, and it's the criterion, the test.
Right.
It's your exemplar, and adoption means, you know.
But they, it's what I said, they consider. It's considered dicta in that it was a point disputed, and then they do refer, hey, we're not. This isn't a command control. This isn't legal and political enforcement. At least that's their language. And so if you then pair that with Travelers Insurance, you could make the claim that this is a powerful shopping choice. It creates an incentive, but that's different than an enforceable standard.
That's a question of fact.
And that's your position.
And what we would like is the opportunity to show what the actual impact of this policy is in a final trial.
What would you show? You would show that by putting CNG vehicles to the head of the line, that actually imposes a CNG standard. Is that essentially your argument?
Yes. And you, as, again, picking up on the engine manufacturer's case, when the court was considering what a standard was, it went to the actual language of the statute, looked at standard, and then looked standard up in the dictionary, and again, standard, that this tie to enforcement. And the court, the trial court took the language to adopt or attempt to enforce, which is expressly disjunctive, and read them together. And as I set forth in the brief, I believe that the adoption of any standard is preempted conduct. And the standard here, the preferred standard, the standard is CNG. That, according to the city of Dallas, is emissions control technology. It's exactly what it is. And that's cited in the engine manufacturer's case as one of the things that relate to emissions. And
it's attempting to enforce a standard.
Pardon me?
It is at the very least, you can argue, attempting to enforce.
Right.
It's not requiring all the taxis to do CNG. This is a friendly statement. It is a duty to enforce that the taxis will all be CNG.
It is indeed.
From the airport.
It is indeed. But as I pointed out in the brief, the act of adoption itself is preempted conduct. It's just that you have to have a justiciable a case or controversy, which means they have to do something
to create
a uniquely agreed party.
How is this enforced in practice? What if you didn't have a CNG motor and you tried to get in the preferred section, or how
would be ticketed and fined.
I see.
Does the record show any enforcement of that, the jumping to the head of the line without the sticker? Probably doesn't, because it wasn't developed, right?
It was not.
So I guess you could argue that you're being forced, everyone who doesn't have a CNG motor is forced to yield to the CNG people. And that is an imposition of a standard and a restriction upon your liberty to pick up people at the airport.
There is a person at that window that lets the CNG, that dispatches the CNG taxi cabs. There's a central queue, and then when a flight comes in or something like that, and they know there's going to be a need, they will dispatch a number of cabs to an outlying holding area that's closer to the terminal. And so there is a person that is standing there and that is letting the CNG folks go to the head of the line and bypass all the others.
How do they know that they have those compliant vehicles? Does the vehicle have a sign on it, or do they know the cab number, or what?
It does. It has a blue CNG diamond-shaped sticker on it.
Here's a little set of issues that just are on my mind, so you'll want to know, presumably want to know why I'm a little hesitant here. How does your argument marry with the subsection D exemption? Couldn't the relating to admissions may be vague enough that you then have to ask, well, why does this relate to admission? Isn't this more a vehicle use, like a carpool lane, like an HOV lane? And in that context, Congress specifically said, subsection D, we want localities to do this.
You do get out of the way for those kind of things, but what the city can't do is just use that as a shroud or a pretext for circling back on something on enforcing a particular kind of emission control technology, which is exactly what they're doing. They can do, it's similar to me, it's similar to an anti-discrimination employment statute versus at will. You can fire somebody for any reason, but there are certain impermissible reasons for which you can't fire somebody.
But HOV lanes, carpool lanes, telling people you can't idle in your car, you're not saying your reading of Section 209 would invalidate all those?
It wouldn't invalidate any of those. But it would only invalidate ones that made choices between and among numerous duly registered CAFE compliant, EPA compliant vehicles.
Okay, that's a tight distinction. But I see it. So I'm not saying it's an invalid one. It's just hard. I look, when you get past difficult language, Congress is trying to say states, localities, primarily you take care of local pollution. And as I understand the incipient cause for this is EPA's upset at Dallas.
Suppose. Well,
right.
And which proves what the purpose of it is to control. But suppose the city of Dallas adopted an ordinance that said that no vehicle could park at the airport, or that the vehicles with CNG, private vehicles, could all park at the closest possible spots, just like the handicapped spots at the airport, and the non-CNG vehicles from now on were going to all have to go to remote parking.
I think that you might be at pains there to find a sufficiently aggrieved individual to bring that lawsuit. And I tried to direct that.
I mean, it would be sort of analogous, though. I don't know if a grievance is the problem. I mean, is the distinguishing factor. I'm really just sort of asking you, because there's no question that would, to people who travel a lot, that would pose a significant burden.
It would, but it wouldn't eliminate the plausibility of parking three rows out and going ahead and going to the terminal. It doesn't have the economic impact that we're talking about here. It doesn't have the choice limiting The absolutely distinguishing.
What if the city ordinance had said that within 5 years, all of the taxi cabs in Dallas are going to CNG vehicles? That would clearly be a standard in violation of the preemption provision.
It would indeed.
And that's the second. That's the New York case, more analogous, right?
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Although City-wide, that case was energy
mandatory concepts.
Right. But I would posit to the court that in light of the fact that we are not in a proprietor exception or a market participant type right. situation, I would posit to the court that all the argument but in both the city's briefing and in the trial court's memorandum of opinion, that's really argument on the merits of the mandate question, and they never adopts the mandate question. But it does argue to the merits of it.
How many clients are you actually representing?
The Association of Taxi Cab Operators has approximately 700 members.
700, even though only a few of them may go to the airport, or what?
Or
they all may go to the airport, but some of them only go occasionally.
They used to. Many of them would go to the airport. They do not have any members that drive CNG vehicles anymore. So none do now, but they formerly did.
All right, thank you. You have time for rebuttal, Mr. Casso.
May it please the court. My name is Chris Casso, and I represent the City of Dallas in this case. Appellant contends that the front-of-the-line incentive at the city-owned Love Field Airport is a standard relating to the control of emissions in violation of the express preemption provision of the Clean Air Act. I will discuss why the incentive is not a standard relating to the control of emissions and therefore is not preempted by the Act. The incentive acts as a method to encourage the purchase of cleaner vehicles while preserving an owner's option of purchasing gasoline-powered taxicabs. The incentive is a totally voluntary program that only applies to the city-owned and operated Love Field Airport and which allows CNG cabs to move to the front of the line.
What if it were citywide? Would you have a very different case? All
taxis
can move to the head of every hotel line if they get the sticker.
I would think that would not be preempted by the Act either because of the historic nature of the city's regulation of taxi cabs.
What is there in the Clean Air Act that talks about the historic nature of the regulation of cabs?
It doesn't talk about that in the Clean Air Act. It's just Congress and the courts looking at the issue.
Court's my eye, other than this district court. I mean, a standard is a standard, according to Justice Scalia, and a standard is something that require, at the very least, that requires people to select certain emissions qualities in the vehicles.
Well, I understand the question was that there was an incentive at each throughout the city that there would be an incentive that they could go to the front
of the
line.
Well, you're right to be precise, but I guess the primary argument being asserted to us now is that the whole question of whether we give it the word incentive or we call it a dictate is a question of fact that has to be explored.
Well, I disagree. It's a question of fact. This is a question of law about whether or not it's a standard. The fact that the plaintiff is trying to say that the fact that they lose money makes it a standard, there are no cases that say that. There are no cases that say simply by losing money that is.
I thought the Supreme Court in Travelers Insurance suggested that the word that he used, if it's acute enough, it could become a dictate.
Well,
so that would be a case that arguably, if you get to acuteness enough, am I wrong about that?
I don't think you're wrong about that, but again, I go back to the argument about the city has been regulating taxicabs for years, and we don't think that Congress intended to supplant the city's regulation of taxicabs by virtue of the adoption of the Clean Air Act. It's important to note that the incentive...
So therefore, you're saying that if the city adopted a regulation that all vehicles within all taxis within 5 years will be CNG, that is not a standard?
Well, if all taxi cabs are required to be CNGs and they would be prohibited from operating in the city, then I think it gets closer to the Metropolitan case. I think it gets closer to the South Coast case where there were mandates that said you shall... the fleet vehicle shall
right.
be
so
CNG
you,
cabs.
So basically, you are essentially conceding that at some level, the quote incentive is a standard.
Well, but what I understand the question is, it's not the incentive, it's that you shall have CNG cabs, not that there is an incentive that you can go to the front of the line at various queues throughout the city.
Okay, well, but in metropolitan, never mind, you understand what I'm saying. In metropolitan, you do certain amount to push the private parties into having to purchase a certain kind of vehicle, and it becomes a standard.
That's what the New York case
held. The power to regulate is the power to destroy, just as the power to tax is the power to destroy. So.
Correct. Now, it's important to note that the incentive requires no one to purchase a CNG cab. It requires no one to wait in any queue anywhere else out in the city, and it permits CNG cabs to drop off passengers, or non-CNG cabs to drop off passengers at the airport.
Which, of course, is totally uneconomical.
Well, I don't know that it's uneconomical, because you can drop off passengers at the airport. If you pick somebody up downtown and you drop them off at the airport, you don't have to wait. You turn around, you go back downtown and pick someone else up.
And you get in line in order to pick someone. I've talked to a lot of cab drivers, as I'm sure you have, and the idea that you can go out to the airport, drop somebody off, and then not have a prospect of getting in another passenger from the airport is a serious problem.
And again, it's a city-owned airport.
I don't think that makes a bit of difference.
Well, we're a market participant under the Cardinal Towing case. This is a city-owned facility. We could preclude anyone.
Public facility. It's for the people. It's a public facility.
But we think that the Cardinal Towing case, which dealt with using this.
So you could say that no citizen in Dallas could park at your airport unless they were driving a CNG vehicle?
Yes, we believe that we can do that.
Or you can impose a parking fee for non-CNG vehicles of like $30 a day, whereas CNG vehicles owned by private citizens only have to pay $15 a day.
Yes, we think we can do that, because we own the airport and we're a market participant. And
this
we are
is not
like
your
the
primary argument, is it?
I'm sorry?
This is not your primary argument.
No, that's not my primary argument. This is additional authority for the fact that why it's not a standard. And
okay.
So it's our backup argument. But
In Justice Scalia's opinion that lends support to the market participant argument.
Well, in
you're focusing on the standard. And I think you've made the argument, and the fact that it's difficult is proven by the Supreme Court's decision. We aren't given much clarity, perhaps. But why am I wrong to think that there's more clarity in subsection D? You heard my question, so I won't rephrase it.
Could you
discuss the interrelationship between the preemption and then the exemption from the preemption?
No, I think that's exactly right. Congress clearly said that the cities and states are allowed to control and regulate the operation of vehicles. What Congress was concerned about was having 50 different rules, 50 different states having 50 different emission standards. That's what Congress trying to prevent, and that's what subsection A addresses. Subsection D acknowledges the fact that states and municipalities have historically controlled air pollution and regulated air pollution. So it was the idea that those in-use restrictions are not standards. Again, we're not saying the incentive is a standard, but even assuming it were a standard, under D it would be allowed, because as the court and other courts have held, and as you had indicated before, carpool lanes are okay, idling is okay, not having cars downtown.
Which is the most analogous subsection D case that supports your position?
I guess the most analogous would be the one of the engine manufacturers case, which basically said that, or maybe it was the Green Mountain case, which said that these types of restrictions, where they talked about the carpool lanes and various other things, that those types of restrictions are okay. Applying plaintiff's rationale, all of those would be bad, because all of those, quote, relate to emissions. All of those are designed to eliminate emissions. And 73% of the ozone and emissions in the city of Dallas, the Dallas area, are from mobile sources.
Well, they're not from taxi cabs.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
They're not from taxi cabs, because if more people rode in taxi cabs rather than driving their own vehicles, it would probably save emissions overall.
Right, but if more people drove in CNG taxicabs, it would reduce the emissions even further, and that's the goal.
Well, there
is to
are
try
other
and...
ways there, but part of the problem here is that Dallas has arbitrarily chosen one kind of emissions-reducing vehicle as opposed to others.
Well, the decision was not arbitrary. The reason that the city chose the CNG cabs is because that's the dominant technology now, and those are larger vehicles. We want those taxi cabs that go out to the airport to have enough capacity to handle the several passengers and their luggage. The electric vehicles, the hybrid vehicles, all those vehicles right now are smaller, and so they would be inappropriate for a taxi cab operation. So that's why we require the CNG, in addition to the fact that there are fueling stations, CNG fueling stations right out there at the airport. Whereas if there were electric vehicles, the technology is not there now. It may be in the future, but it's not there now. Because of the fact that the taxi cabs are highly regulated, the city contends that it is permitted to control those taxi cabs. And it's important to note in this case that these taxi cab drivers have voluntarily chosen to operate at Love Field Airport. There are tens of thousands of other locations in the city, American Airlines Center, the Convention Center, hotels, restaurants, office buildings, all of those other places where they can operate. However,
What's the fixed fee from downtown to the airport?
I think the fixed fee is $12, and so that's the fixed fee that they can charge.
Are there fixed fees from the convention centers or the hotels or the...
No, there's no fixed fee for that.
Decorative center?
There's a fixed fee to go from Love Field to downtown and a fixed fee to go to Market Center. And so those are the two locations that have the fixed fee. So obviously there's an incentive for them. They get a guaranteed fare when they're at the airport. It's relatively safe, and then they get to charge more. So there's an incentive for them. But I analogize it to a regulated utility. A regulated utility says, wait a minute, I want to be able to charge whatever I can, but the statutes and the cases say, no, in exchange for a monopoly, your rates are affected. So similarly, in exchange for getting the monopoly to operate at our city-owned airport, we have an incentive. We would like you to have CNG technology to reduce the...
I don't know any public utilities that are permitted. They're all allowed. They're not to discriminate. That's one of the cardinal rules of public utility regulation, except on a viable economic basis. And there's no viable economic basis here. You're regulating for an entirely different purpose, which is to prevent the EPA from coming down on your backs.
Well, we think that it's not arbitrary because it applies only to taxi cabs.
I didn't say it was arbitrary. I just said it had nothing to do with public utility regulation with regard to providing services to customers.
Well, I was just using it for the analogy of if you're in a regulated industry.
It's a bad analogy.
Okay.
I think we, Judge Higginson is interested, and I am too, in this. You know, Justice Scalia does define standards much broader than some people thought they would be defined, and vis-a-vis this purchase mandate. And then at the end, there is a suggestion, well, what do you do about incentive programs? The dissent says they're saying that incentive programs aren't enforceable either. And at best, the court is saying, you know, here's some considerations about them.
Well, I think that...
They're not saying
that they're not preempted, but they're saying that they're different from the command and control structure of a standard. Whereas with the command and control structure is thou shalt do something, like in the Metropolitan case, thou shalt charge less for gas cabs than you can for CNG cabs. There's no such thou shalt here.
Well, if a robber has a gun to your head, that's a pretty big thou shalt, isn't it?
Well, it is, but that's not an incentive. The incentive here is
it's a pretty big incentive.
I mean, the incentive here is that we allow you for just a limited area being able to pick up. There are many other ways.
Why isn't it thou shalt not go to the head of the line? Thou shalt not.
Yeah. Thou shalt is you are required to do it. In other words, in New York, you shall not operate a taxi cab unless you charge less for the gas and charge more for the CNG. That applied citywide. This doesn't apply citywide, and I think it's important that the fact that it's only limited to a narrow area, that doesn't convert an incentive to the standard, simply because if you're complying with the program, that you're required to go through the queue. Now, the penalty provision in the ordinance is if someone fraudulently puts one of those CNG stickers. That's the penalty provision.
But Judge Dennis is right that it would also be a penalty if you cut the line.
Well, if you cut the line, you're going to be told to go back to the back of the line. And so
that's the thou shalt not. But I guess back to the Scalia etymological focus, I don't see that the Supreme Court addressed the argument opposing counsel is highlighting, which is the related language. In other words, it's any standard, and it's not just the standard, it's the adoption or attempted enforcement. So once you look at the remainder of the language in that sentence, it becomes broader and broader. The Supreme Court may have said, well, we mean something fixed by the word standard, but they haven't yet spoken to how broad, you know what I'm saying.
Yes.
What do you think about attempt or attempt to enforce?
Well, I don't think there's an attempt to enforce here, because the fundamental question is it's still a standard. It is an option. There are 2,700 cabs within the city. Only 40 of them are CNG cabs. Obviously, all those other cab drivers have chosen not to, and they can continue to operate anywhere else in the city. They might like the fact that they have gasoline where they can go further or have more power and don't have to worry about refueling. They may like the fact that under the ordinance they get to charge more when the price of gas goes up. So we haven't dictated the choices, as the Traveler's case and some of the others have said. We haven't dictated the choice on what these taxi cabs can do. They're free to exercise that, and only 2% of the overall taxi cabs are CNG. So there hasn't been the dictate of choice. It hasn't been like the South Coast case, hasn't been like the Metropolitan case, where there was a requirement that you were required to do that.
So your opponent's contention that pretty much business, if you want to operate a taxi, you've got to go to Love Field. Your response is, well, then it's very relevant that only 2% have adopted the sticker, because you're saying they perceive other benefits that outweigh the CNG front of the line thing?
I think that they can perceive that there's other benefits that outweigh having the CNG. And again, there's nothing that requires these taxi cabs to be out at Love Field.
Is there anything going on here about the yellow cab company versus the smaller independent operators? I mean, are all these CNG vehicles owned by the major taxi cab company, whatever it may be?
I don't know if the record reflects whether or not the CNGs are owned by the larger cab companies or not. I'm not sure if that's the case, but obviously it's not limited to them, and anyone can do it. And a lot of these, the record reflects that these that the cab drivers, at least the one that testify, they lease vehicles from other companies, and so it's not like they own their own cab. So they could lease a CNG cab from someone else or lease a gas cab, and they choose to lease the gas cab because it's cheaper than lease the CNG cab. So there's different choices that they can make, and we don't feel that there's that the city has dictated where they go.
Suppose we uphold this regulation. Then I suppose the city could also say, I know Dallas is a huge convention town, that if the cabs are going to pick up people at the convention center or the state fair, that they also give a preference to CNG vehicles, right?
Yes, that's correct. I think as long as it's a preference so that they have a choice, that does not make it a standard.
Well, it's a preference. But, you know, if you've got to wait 7 hours, which I believe was one of the affidavits, to pick somebody up, that's not a choice. That's a choice to make zero income.
Well, it's a choice if you want to limit yourself to one location.
But the hypothetical is now, what's to stop Dallas from saying all locations, hotels? And your answer is yes. There's no limiting principle then, right? The city of Dallas could say all vehicles.
Well, I don't know functionally how that would work in terms of a queue. If I call up from my house to pick for them to pick me up. There's not going to be a queue there. On my downtown office building, there's not going to be a queue there. I think functionally it really doesn't work in the vast majority of cases, all the offices, all the restaurants, everything else.
Well,
you're not going to have queues at every one of those places.
The rule would be if every single dispatcher, when people call for a taxi, if anyone with a CNG sticker calls, says I'm nearby, they go to the front. You could make a pretty easy functional rule.
Well, you might be able to make a pretty easy functional rule with respect to if you call in. I don't know how that would work if you would call in and say.
Okay. I guess I'm nibbling back at my first question, but you have every reason not to answer it. But if you were writing this decision and we were upholding it, would you try to write it saying this isn't a standard, or would you write it this is an exemption from what is a standard?
I would write it both ways. I would say that it's not a standard because it's an incentive. It only applies to the city-owned airport, which is a very small part of the entire city, and the city is permitted to regulate the in-use operation of taxicabs, which they have historically regulated. I see that my time is almost up. We request that the court affirm the district court's decision and dismiss this case. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Hollingsworth.
There was an assertion by Mr. Casso that there were only 40 cabs that had CNG that are licensed in the city of Dallas. That was the record a year and a half ago. And one of the repeated discussion about how much they could expand this or how far it could go is answered by the question that we're positing to the court today. If it operates at a sufficient level to constitute an economic mandate, then it is sufficient to qualify as a standard. There is an underlying supposition in all of this discussion that is unproved and is completely outside the record, and that is that compressed natural gas taxi cabs are necessarily superior emission vehicles to other vehicles that are in the fleet. Specifically, there is record evidence about the composition of the fleet at the very near the beginning of the filing of this case. There are Toyota Camry hybrids that are a part of that. If you apply the EPA regulations to Toyota Camry hybrids and you look at what the emissions characteristics are of these CNG vehicles, Toyota Camry hybrids are superior and they are being bypassed.
Well, what is that? What legal, just with your limited time, what does that go to in this case? That's back to Dallas. You made the wrong choice responding to EPA.
I was responding to the underlying premise of the entire discussion has been that they are better. To us, that is a tribal issue.
Are there, you're saying there are Toyota Camry hybrid taxis?
Yes.
Does anybody in Dallas own them?
Yes. Oh. And they are bypassed under this policy. We cannot know the overall impact of that because we haven't had a trial yet. But that's certainly something that's available to be looked at the trial. With regard to I'm struggling with the very same language that Judge Higginson is struggling with, but I don't see the limitation of standards to things that are enforced. With regard to the use issue, or the use and regulation, I think that if you take an HOV lane and I still have a justiciability issue with it, but if you take an HOV lane or something like that, it's designed to reduce emissions without getting in any way into the characteristics of the automobile by which those emissions are reduced. If you're CAFE compliant and you have enough passengers in your vehicle, you can get into the CNG, lane.
Washington, D.C. has some HOV lanes that where it's not only number of passengers, but if you have a hybrid vehicle, you're allowed to use those.
They do.
You know that?
And I am aware of that. I am aware of those. Yes. And I've thought about that. And I do think that some of it, you know, my response to it is that you have to have a justiciable controversy. And if we're going on mandate, I mean, maybe that's a reason to draw a standard a little more narrowly than I think is implied by engine manufacturers. But if you're going with mandate, then the operative question becomes repeatedly, is this economically mandated?
Incentive by its nature tends to be economic.
It does, but is it economically compelled? And Travelers talks about the elimination of plausible choices. All we want is the opportunity to prove it. And I think if in light of the discussion today, it dawned on me when I was just preparing in the last couple of days, a lot of the arguments, it's not the entire city, it's only a few taxi cabs, all of that stuff, that is a discussion of the merits of the case we're asking to try. And we do believe that we put in prima facie evidence of in the form of the affidavits referenced by Judge Jones that shows that there is a compulsion there. Does it rise to the level that's legally sufficient? Let us try that case and find out. Thank you.
I think we understand your case. Thank you very much.